I hope you enjoy the refreshments that you may or may not were supposed to have taken. I apologize. There was a little bit of miscommunication with the SOAR sheet, and I did not print it out. I thought it would be, but I'm because I have my email on the source sheet. If you want to email me, that was stupid. But if anyone wants a copy of the source sheet, I'm happy to send it out to you. Most of the sources are from Rashi, so if you have a Chumash that you know, you can find most of it there, and I'll go through the sources as well. But I'm sorry, I apologize. Yes, and I will speak louder.
And can you introduce?
Yes, I will introduce. So Rabbi Tershiner is actually doing guard duty, which is why he's not here. There was also another miscommunication. There's no one opening the door, so that's why. He's there. Should I come a little closer? No, but I don't want you not to hear.
We'll hear.
You're here? Okay. Just keep telling me this if you can hear me. I'm not used to having so many people interested in what I say that no one usually cares if they can't hear me at the back of the classroom.
I'm sure that's true.
My name is Shandy Kestenbaum. I actually work together with Miriam. I teach at Ol Pana. I'm on mat leave, but I am. I'm coming back very soon. I'm very, very excited to have some intellectual stimulation. As much as I love my children, my five boys, I'm very, very excited to take a mat leave from my mat leave. So I teach at Ol Pana, depending on the year, just a couple of different subjects, Chumash, Navi. I think I'm doing media this year, some history. We're a big history family, so it usually follows me somewhere. I'm actually a third generation teacher. My mother's a teacher, and my grandfather was a teacher, so it was kind of ingrained. I've been trying to avoid it, but then it kind of found me. That's, I guess, introduction. So we're speaking about this week's parsha. So I know I spoke a lot about sorrow. I'm going to focus on the other part of what happened. Can you hear me? Yes, we're good. Louder. Okay. So there are two major narratives that go on in this week's parsha. Parsha's Vayesar. There's two major narratives that happen. The first one is buying the burial plot for Sarah. So we know that Sarah has now died, and Avram needs to find a place for her to find a place to bury her. And then the next thing that happens in this parsha, which is every parsha's teacher's favorite, I think, parsha, because everyone comes home with the little camels and the little well. Is the story of finding a wife for Yitzchak. And one of the most common questions that's asked on this parsha is that if you look through the story, there is so much detail given to these two seemingly insignificant stories. I mean, we go through like Eliezer's entire plan, and then the whole plan, the whole plan plays out. And it goes through every single step, and then it does it again. And when we have the story of Avram, I mean, we have this whole back and forth going back and forth between him and Ephron. It's just like, why are you giving so much screen time? We know the Torah doesn't do that, right? We know we can go hundreds of years in the Torah. We know we can go through 39 years of wandering in the desert. Like, we don't hear anything about that. And now all of a sudden, we have two stories where we have a seemingly, seemingly insignificant stories. Obviously, they're significant, but why do we give these stories so much screen time? So before I go into what I want to speak about, as many of you know, we have Rabbi Saxel Shalom, his yahrzeit is tomorrow. So I felt it's one of my favorite explanations from Rabbi Sachs, which I use all the time, so I wanted to bring it in, even though it has nothing to do with what we're going to speak about. But he does answer this question, so I'm sorry you don't have the source here. I am going to read it from him because no one articulates like Rabbi Sachs. So he says... And he's addressing this question. Why do we spend so much time on these two stories? So he says, the explanation is simple and unexpected. Throughout the story of Avram and Sarah, God promises them two things, children and a land. The promise of the land is repeated no less than seven times. If you know Rabbi Sachs, he's really into numbers. He counts everything, right? How many times has this been said? The promise of children occurs four times. Avram's descendants will be a great nation, as many as the dust of the earth and the stars in the sky. He will be the father not of one nation, but of many. Despite this, when Sarah dies, Avram has not a single inch of land that he can call his own. And he has only one child who will continue the covenant, Yitzchak, who is currently unmarried. Neither promise has been fulfilled. Hence the extraordinary detail of the two main stories in Chayesara. The purchase of the land and the finding of a wife for Yitzchak. There is a moral here. And the Torah slows down the speed of the narrative as it speeds up the action so that we will not miss the point. I'm going to say that again. The Torah slows down the speed of the narrative as it speeds up the action so we will not miss the point. Before I get to his point, I think that's also such an incredible life lesson. When we're getting to something significant, we slow down. Don't rush in. Don't rush into it. Slow down so you get the point. What's the point? God promises, but we have to act. God promised Avram the land, but he has to buy the first field. God promised Avram many descendants, but Avram has to ensure that his son was married, and to a woman who would share the life of the covenant, so that Avram would have, as we say today, Jewish grandchildren. God promises, but we have to act. And it's one of my most favorite explanations. Yes, he gave the promises. And it goes back to that famous joke, right, where the man is in the middle of the lake, and he says, God, save me, God, save me. And he brings in the lifeboat, and he says, no, I'm waiting for God to save me. And then he brings in the helicopter, all these things. And then he drowns, and he says, God, you didn't save me. He's like, hello. The raft, the lifeguards, all these different things. I know, I totally butchered the joke. it's famous enough, right? And God promises, but we have to act. And that's what he says. We're getting so much details about these stories, because yes, he had tremendous promises, but Avram needed to take those first steps. And we know how the promise played out. The promise, we have the land of Israel, we have the thousands and thousands and thousands of millions. Millions? Is that exaggeration? Yeah, millions of descendants. I'm not exaggeration. Past the millions. Again, nothing to do with what we're going to talk about, but you know, it's one of my favorites, so I wanted to throw that out there. The way I see, the way I understand these two stories is that giving us this so much detail about Ephron and the buying of Maran and Machpelah, and giving us so much detail of the story of Rivka, is trying to teach us a contrast between two different personalities. And that's what I want to focus on. What was Rivka's personality? And we can contrast a little to Avram. So if we look at at where we meet Ephron the first time, we see that Avram is paying Ephron money for... Now you for sure can't hear me, right? I think it's fine. I'll just wait until later. Avram has to pay Ephron an enormous amount of money, and we go through this, right? First, Ephron says, no, take it for free, it's okay, and Avram says, no, thank you, keep your favors, I'm going to pay you. And then what does Ephron do? He ends up, we see in the Pasuk, in Perachav Gimel, and again, I apologize if you don't have it in front of you, but we're in Perachav Gimel 23, verse Hetzayin, which is 16. He says, Avram accepts Ephron's terms. Vayishkol Avram lo Ephron et hakesef asher diber ba'aznei chet b'nei chet. Avram gives Ephron the amount of money that was told to him. Arba meot shekel kesef. 400 shekel of silver. I don't know the conversion rate of how much that is worth now, but we know that was an enormous amount of money. So we have Ephron who first says, no problem, take it for free. And Avram says, no, thank you, I want to pay. And what does he do? He quotes him a crazy amount of money, which Avram pays. And Rashi, who I have learned through teaching Chumash, when Rashi does not like someone, he really does not like someone. And Rashi says, probably one of the most famous Rashis on that pasuk, it says, Vayishkol Avram le'Ephron. Avram paid Ephron, and Ephron's name right there is missing a vav. And what does he say? He said, the name Ephron is written without a vav to indicate that there was something missing in Ephron, which was his sincerity. He promised a lot, but even a little he didn't do. And I think this is also where my kids come home and they sing the song of Mor Ma'atha, Say Arbe, that what you have to do is you say a little and you do a lot. Ephron promised a lot, I'll give it to you for free, whatever you want, you're my friend, you're our brother, even though you're a stranger, you're one of us. But when push comes to shove, not only did he not do a lot, even a little he didn't do. And he has him pay an enormous sum. So that's our story of Ephron. We see his personality. And what about Rivka? Where do we meet Rivka? So we meet Rivka through Eliezer has his whole grand plan. I need to find a wife for my master's son. I need to find someone who displays the idea of chesed. So he comes up with this whole grand plan. What am I going to do? I'm going to go to this well, and I'm going to ask someone for a drink. And if she gives me water and also gives my camels, then I'll know that it's the right one. And that's what happens. So we're in Perek Chaf Dalet, After we've already outlined his entire plan, now the plan takes place. So we're Psukim Yud Zayin to Yud Tet, which is 17 to 19, so chapter 24, verse 17 to 19. We see Eliezer runs over and says, please let me have some water from your jug. And when she let him drink, she said, I'm also going to give your camels now that you finish drinking. And what's interesting is that there's another story that's very similar to this. There's another story where it's very similar, where someone asks for something and that person goes overboard with generosity. Where that story happens is actually in a parsha earlier, in Perek Yudchet in Sefer Bereishit. We have a story where Avram is recovering from his Brit Milah, right? He's sitting in the heat of the sun, and he's begging for visitors, and Hashem sends him three angels to come and visit, and they come in, and what does Avram tell them? He says, let a little water be brought, bathe your feet, I'm going to give you bread, right? I'm going to give you bread, and they said, okay. Avram goes into the tent, and what does he tell Sarah? He says, I need flour, I need to make cakes, and he goes out, and he takes a calf, and he's hastening to serve it, and the guy promised them crackers, and he's coming out with a full-blown roast, right? This is Avram. And when Eliezer, and this also gives us insight into Eliezer's brain, right? Why did he set up this whole test in the first place? He knows Avram. He knows Avram is the exact opposite of Ephron. He knows Avram is say a little and do a lot. And Rivka did that exact same thing. So we see that Rivka is fully, has the trait of chesed so ingrained in her. And it's exactly the same trait of chesed that Avram has. So we see there's a compatibility. I understand Rivka doesn't marry Avram, but we have to get to that. But we have a compatibility here between Avram and Rivka. And Ravan Rambezek gives actually another comparison between Avram and Rivka, which is also very nice. Which what he says is that Avram grows up in a house of idolatry. So, and again, I have five sons. They sometimes like to reenact the Parsha. I don't know if you ever take a look at the Parsha stories through the lens of a parent. I mean, like, it gets pretty violent. But one of their favorite stories to reenact is smashing the idols of Terach. So far, our glass is still intact, but I'm waiting for when their creativity gets a little stronger. But they love that story, right? We have Terach, who does idols. Not only that, Terach, who gave up his own son, if you look at the Midrashic way of looking at it, right? He gave up his own son. And Nebuchadnezzar talk about family drama. Nimrod. And what does Avram do? He completely takes a different life pattern. He leaves this family, his home, this whole country of deceit, and he builds up a whole new life for himself. But like I said, when Rashi doesn't like someone, he really doesn't like someone. When we look into Rivka's family, we meet her brother Lavan, Perek Chavdal, Pasuk Gimel, right? Vayan Lavan Uvetual. Oh, sorry, I missed the one. We're in Pasuk Chaf Tet. We meet Lavan. It says, Rivka has this brother. His name is Lavan. And Lavan ran out to the man by the spring. Now, you know what Rashi thinks about him because the guy just ran. And what does Rashi say about him on that Pasuk? He says, when he saw the nose ring, he said, this must be a rich man. And he goes running to find him. All right, so we see Rashi's assessment of his character. And he continues. So when Rashi has, I only discovered this a couple of years ago, is that when Rashi has a point, I'm going totally off topic here for a minute, but when we learn Chumash in a traditional way, right? You learn the Pasuk, you learn the Rashi, you learn the Pasuk, you learn the Rashi. When you look at a concept, when you look at Chumash as a concept and a whole story, then you can see how sometimes the commentaries are trying to pull together an idea, and their commentary will follow that idea throughout the story. So if Rashi is trying to teach us who Lavan is, instead of saying, wow, Rashi really doesn't like this guy, what Rashi is doing is he's trying to prove his point various different times. So it's going to keep coming up. He doesn't like Lavan. We know it. Lavan, you know, Lavan's not great. Esav is a Rasha. Bilam is a Rasha, right? We go through this many times with Rashi. So it's not so much that it's repetitive, it's that he's trying to, for lack of a better word, it's confirmation bias, right? This was my idea, and I'm going to show you why this is true. So Rashi talks about Lavan again. When they're having a conversation, it says, Vayan Lavan Ubetuel, that Lavan and Betuel answered, but we see Lavan's name was first. Lavan answers, he was a wicked person because he answered before his father. So again, someone might say, Rashi, give him a break. I'm sure Rashbam has a lot to say about that. I have to also talk about family drama. I love it when they go head to head. It was his grandson, right? But we see Lavan's not great, and we know that Betuel was not so great. And again, if you look at the Midrashic point, he's like, they're really bad. So we have Rivka, who comes from this family, not so great on the Shidduch resume, and she completely changes her life around. Again, exactly like Avram. So we understand there's compatibility, and this is, actually, I don't know if I can say this or not, but I'm going to say it anyways. I'm politically correct in today's day, but I'm quoting Rav Hirsch, so we can quote Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch agrees with Rashi, because he says the only thing pure, he quotes Chazal to say that the only thing pure about Lavan was his name. If you know enough Hebrew, Lavan's name was white. That's all Lavan means. So Rivka passes all these tests of kindness, right? She's kind, she has chesed, great. Why does she have to marry Yitzchak? Right? If she's a compatible pass for, match for Avram, what does that have to do with Yitzchak? Why is this the perfect person for Yitzchak? And that's where I kind of want to go here. What's our first interaction between... let me just make sure I'm on the right thing here. Sorry. One last thing. It even says it in the Pasuk. Perek Abdalad, Pasuk Yedalad. He says... let this be one, the woman who lowers her jar and gives to me and to my camels, you have decreed for your servant Yitzchak that this is going to be the one that he should marry. Like, Hashem, this is all up to you. I'm setting this whole trial up because this is who Yitzchak has to marry. So why does Yitzchak have to marry Rivka? Why are their personalities the right match? When does Rivka's first date with Yitzchak is quite dramatic. Parakhav Dalid, Pasuk Samach Dalid, we see Rivka raises her eyes, and this is where sometimes it's not so good to look at the translation. Batisa Rivka Dena, Rivka raises her eyes, but Tera Yitzchak, she sees Yitzchak, and what does she do? She falls off the camel. Anyone has embarrassing first date stories? I think this kind of lights it all. But the translation it gives on Safari is alighted. You know, in Israel, when they have the bus signs and it says alighting only, you're like, what does that mean? Like, why couldn't they just say getting off, right? So alighting. She alights the camel, but she falls off. And what is that? And so then the Nitziv tries to unpack this. And he explains, and the Nitziv says in his commentary, Ha'ei Makdavar, he says, why does she fall off? Because Merov Pachat Ubusha, she has fear and humility in front. And she understands that I am not fitting to be a wife for him. She is not fearful because she's scared. She is in awe of Yitzchak. And what's so interesting is that we see very few times that they actually even speak to each other, which kind of explains the whole like drama that happens in next week's parsha, right? They don't talk. They don't have a very... when you look at and I think the Kliyakar says this, that when you look at the relationships between the other Avot and the Imahot, they did speak, right? Sara definitely spoke to Avraham, right? We know that, and Miriam filled us in on some of that. And we know that Yaakov and Rachel and Leah, they also spoke. They had a compatible relationship. Yitzchak and Rivka do not speak. I think there's twice that we see a conversation happen. It might only be one. And I think it's when she tells him, I'm going to die if you don't kick me about. I think that was it. So, again, it brings us to this point. Why is this such a perfect match? This seems like the worst idea ever. We're talking about someone who the first time she meets her husband, she falls off a camel and never speaks to him again. Like, how is this the thing, right? 100%, which brings our first question even more strong, right? Why do we have to know about so much story of Mara Tela and Ephron? And I do think that, I don't remember who says it, so I don't want to misquote. But when it does, when Rivka tells Yitzchak at the end of the drama with Parshat Toldot, when she tells Yitzchak we have to send Esav away because he'll be the death of me, basically. I don't know which commentary says that this was the only time she spoke to him. So it's very eye opening to try and understand. But 100%, the Torah doesn't go into many details, and we don't know what happened. And their conversations, had they spoken, were probably not that significant enough that we need to learn a lesson.
But
they weren't talking. They looked at each other. I'm sure they definitely were together, and they had their children. But I think that if a Torah is going into detail in a story, it teaches something, and if a Torah is not going into detail, it teaches us something as well. And I think that's the approach we have to look. But there is a reason why they have to marry. hopefully we'll get there. But I'm trying to, sometimes the question is better than the answer, but I hope the answer is good.
There's a contrast between the way that Yitzhak davens for Rivka and the way Rachel speaks to Yaakov. Okay, we don't hear Rivka speaking to Yitzhak the same way.
We rarely see Rivka speak in general.
I think you're right. I think the only time that it says specifically that she speaks to him is when she tells him that the daughters of Faith are...
That he's marrying out these people and we got to get him out. So it is, I think that teaches us as well, right? And that's why the Cleopatra says is that their relationship was different. They did not have the same relationship as the other one. So why? What was it about their relationship? I'm trying to think if I have time to put this to this source in. What's actually interesting is that going back to Rivka's personality and where she's coming from, the Aznai in the Torah, one of my favorite commentaries, he says that Yitzchak loved Esav and Rivka loved Yaakov. Right? It says, "Vayehav Yitzchak et Esav, but Rivka have it at Yaakov." Yitzchak loves Esav and Rivka loves Yaakov. Why? Where did Yitzchak come from? Yitzchak was he's called an Ola Tamima, a pure offering. And obviously that goes back to the Kedah Yitzchak and to his own offering, right? His when he was offered as a korban. But he's a complete pure offering. But why else is he a tamim? Why else is he complete? Because he grew up in the house of Avram. He saw nothing that was deceitful. His entire upbringing was, this is like the most perfect bubble of all times, right? Who are his parents? His parents are Avram and Sarah. Where does Rivka come from? Rivka comes from Lavan, comes from Betuel. The whole entire city that I use it more to describe Sodom, but even, you know, but Rivka's entire hometown, I mean, it's like the Gotham of the Bible, right? If anyone here knows anything about Batman. Like, it's a corrupt city. She knows corruption. So when Esav comes over, and the example as Nine the Torah gives, is when Esav comes over to Yaakov and says, teach me how to take the tithe from the straw, right? How do I take Miser from the straw? And Yitzchak's like, wow, look at my Talmud Chacham son. I know, I'm oversimplifying. Rivka's like, don't fall for his tricks. I know exactly what he's up to. And she has this attachment to Yaakov because that's what she was missing as a kid. And Yitzchak has this attachment to Esav because that's what, I don't want to say he was missing the deceit, but he doesn't recognize it. So why do they have to be together? Why? Again, it seems like this is like the worst idea ever. And we know opposites attract and everything, but we have to understand more because we're talking about Torah and we're also talking about the foundation of the Jewish people. So what is it about Yitzchak and Rivka and their personalities that have to match? So here's where it gets a little complicated. My father, Rabbi Shulmanoff Mandel, and I'll give a public thank you. Some of you know he was very, very sick with COVID 2 years ago. Baruch Hashem, he's as far as health goes, completely recovered. We're still working on the driving. He was on a respirator for about 6 months. So it's a nace gole. It is a very public nace miracle. So I'll give a public thank you to anyone who had been davening for him. Shulmanoff, Mepega Bracha. But my father is... he really understands Kabbalah. There are people that say they, you know, pretend they understand, and then there's my father. My father is a rabbi of a shul called Jeff Netzav, and when he speaks, he'll say things, and I'm just looking at him. I know you're speaking English, but I have no idea what you're talking about. You know, like I understand each of those words separately, but when you put them together, I am lost. I am going to take a little bit of a Kabbalistic route here, and hopefully, we'll still be able to understand it somewhat. So it says. In Pirkei Avot, it's one of the most famous Mishnahs in Pirkei Avot. Shimon HaTzadik, Hayam Yoshre Knesset Gedolah, he's one of the last people of the Anshei Knesset Gedolah. Hu Haya Omer, he used to say, Al Shlosha Devarim HaOlam Omeid, the world stands on three things. Anyone? Three things the world stands on? Like I said, one of the most famous verses, right? We have it stands on the Torah, it stands on the Avoda, and it stands on Gmil Chasadim. And Rav Chaim the legend says that what is Torah, what is Chesed, what is Avoda? So he says Avram was that Chesed, Yitzchak was that Avoda, and Yaakov was the Torah. So let's try and understand what this is. And most of this comes from the Ari, who's originally sourcing it back to the Zohar. So another thing that I think that many of us know, especially if you've gone to Jewish school, Jewish day school, you've learned that each of the Avot perfected a Midah. Avram's is a very, very obvious one. Anyone want to take a guess? Which chesed. And what's actually very interesting is he says when the time that he actually perfected this midah of chesed, he only perfected the midah of chesed when he bought that burial plot for Sarah. because it was the first time that he wasn't getting anything from his chesed. When I was in high school and seminary, I used to volunteer a lot for different organizations, sometimes High Lifeline, or in Israel it was, it wasn't an official organization, but I used to sleep in the hospital a lot to give respite to families there. And people used to be like, wow, that's so nice. I'm like, are you kidding? It gets me out of curfew at seminary. Of course I'm going to go sleep in the hospital. I'm getting from this. I like it. I don't have to deal with my roommates. I can buy whatever I want and get to hang out in the hospital. It was great, right? People who and I'm saying this about me, I'm not putting anyone else down. People who like to do chesed, they get something from it too. I'm not saying that they're being selfish, but you get something from it too. Avram buying a burial plot for his wife is chesed shel emes. That's why we know that any time you do anything in the area of death, it's considered a true, true chesed, because that person is not there anymore to see it. And so that's actually when Avram perfected this midah. Does anyone know what Yitzchak's midah was?
Gvura.
This is either why my students hate my classes or love my classes, but everything I say, I go off topic in my head. My sister-in-law, who was actually my roommate in seminary, I didn't set them up, but we're friends. She did a whole project on Yitzchak and Gvura. But Yitzchak's midah was Gvura, was strength. And this is something interesting that I really just learned when I was preparing this. Does anyone know what Sarah's midah was? We don't talk about them so much. Based on, I guess, what you just learned, some of the stuff we just learned about Sarah, does anyone want to take a guess? What was Sarah's midah? Okay, what else? Based on some actions that she's done. Amuna. So it's actually very interesting. The Zohar says that Sarah's midah is gvura. She has strength. She has that gvura. Where do we see it? She will do anything to do the right thing. If Hagar needs to get out, she will take Hagar out. She has din. She has judgment. That is Sarah. It's complete opposite to Avram. Avram is all the chesed. That's why sending out Hagar was actually one of his, it depends on which commentary you take, is one of his 10 tests. It was so against everything he wanted to do, but Sarah has din. She understands the strength. She understands the judgment. And what's interesting is if you look at, and this is where we get very Kabbalistic, you look at the creation of the world. So it says, Bereish bara Elokim, in the beginning, or I'm butchering the translation if you want to get technical, right? In the beginning, Hashem created. What name is Hashem using when he creates the world? Din, Elokim, Elokeinu, that is the name of Din. What name does Hashem use when he creates man? Anyone know? I can't give you, I don't know the actual pasuk.
Well,
or you can take a guess, though. Yudkei Vavkei. Does anyone know what that stands for? Yudkei Vavkei. Not stands for, but what midah that is. Rachamim or chesed, right? Hashem creates the world in din because the world has to exist. It will always exist. Hashem creates man with chesed because he knows that man will fail. And if man was created with din, we would all have a very different existence. Hashem creates the world with din and creates man with chesed. And here is why. No, go ahead.
The pasuk is Vayomer Elohim Naaseh Adam Betzalmim.
But when he makes him.
Vayivra Elohim Et Adam Betzalmo Betzalm Elohim Bara Oto Tahar Viva Bara Oto.
Now I'm in trouble.
The second
story is the Yisera Shem Elohim. Okay, thank you. Okay, I also got this from Yosef Kolatsky, so I'm going to send him an email. But there is a Yudkei Vavkei there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But it is also brought down, right? That Hashem created man with chesed because he understands we fail. That is a brought down thing. But I apologize, and I'm happy that at least something backs me up here. But here's the thought process. The setting of creation, meaning creating man, was with chesed, but din actually brings the creation into existence. Meaning, and maybe that backs up there as well. Even if the setting was in chesed, even when he creates man, we're still with din. That's what's happening here. Eliezer needs to find a wife for Yitzchak, because he needs this din, this gvura of Yitzchak, to match the chesed of Rivka. But let's understand even more why this is so. The Ari explains, right, this combination of Avram's chesed and Sarah's din created Yitzchak. So now we have the midah of chesed and we have the midah of din. We have Avram's chesed combined with Sarah's din creates Yitzchak's gvura. I'm going to try and bring this back down to our practicality, because again, it's very Kabbalistic. Are we happy with just chesed, and are we happy with just gvura? Are there two avot? How many fathers are there? There are three. So what midah are we missing? What do we have to do now? We need to redo this combination to create another midah. And that's why we take this chesed of Rivka and combine it with this gvura of Yitzchak, which came from the foundations of Avram and Sarah. And what do we have? We have Yaakov. And Yaakov is Tiferet. Yaakov is that perfect blend of the two. Sometimes we call it MS, which is always Emma, which is truth, which is always a little confusing because, like, that whole story with the bracho, like, truth, whatever. And that's why we need Tiferet. That's why we have to understand what Tiferet is. Tiferet is that middle ground. It's taking the two. The Rambam really loves Tiferet. If you ever look at the Rambam's explanations, right, he says, there's another famous Mishnah that says, Ezehi derech ishara, derech shetiferet minosa. I think that's the Mishnah. Which is the right way to go? The one that is Tiferet to the person. And Tiferet is that middle ground. Either extreme is not going to be okay. Only Gvura is not good, and only Chesed is not good. And we needed this match of Chesed and Gvura to create Yitzchak. And we needed another match of Chesed and Gvura to create Yaakov, who's going to combine all of this together. But why? Why do we care? What does it have to do with me? What does it have to do with us? Besides for understanding that opposites can attract and it's okay, and that even maybe falling off the camel and never speaking is not the model to follow, but that there is hope, even if, you know, we're not exactly the same. The Jewish people, what are we called? What are we called? We're called the B'nai Yisrael. We are the children of Yisrael, not the B'nai Avram, not the B'nai Yitzchak. Sometimes the B'nai Akiva, but we're called B'nai Yisrael, right? We are the children of Yisrael, because Yisrael, Yaakov, he is that Tiferet between the two. And through this combination, the Jewish people will come out. That the whole Yaakov and Yitzchak and Rivka and Avram, the Yaakov specifically, he is how the whole spiritual world will come through. And we needed all of this to get to where we are right now, to get to Yaakov, who really has, I'm not going to say that chesed is not good and gvura is not good, but if we want to pick which one we want this tiferet, which is also sometimes known as rachamim, which is different than chesed, right? Because, you know, chesed is not always the right thing to do, and din is not always the right thing to do, and rachamim, the way I understand it, is that clarity, right? When do I have mercy, when do I not? When do I do kindness, when do I not? It's that tiferet, it's that blend between the two. And that's the midah that we as the Jewish people are kind of born into, because we come from Yaakov. And we come from his children. Obviously, we come from Avram too. And that's why we needed this very long-winded answer, why we needed this combination of our chesed and our gvura to get to this middle ground, Tiferet. So, I can invite you all again to go and eat some food. I did before.
Thank you so much, everybody, for